CKLN 88.1 FM.
This is Kevin Annett with the friends and relatives of the disappeared, and I want you to listen to Word of Mouth Wednesday. And please listen to our website, hiddenfromhistory.org.
Word of Mouth Wednesday. This is the Word of Mouth Wednesday, and we're back here for another Word of Mouth Wednesday, February the 16th, 2011. And big show lined up tonight. We are back. Glad that we got the stay of the decision on the broadcast license. So CKLN 88.1 FM still broadcasting, and we are going to be speaking about CKLN tonight. Later on in the show, we're going to be having an interview with Leora Courtney Wolfman, who's a student out in Vancouver, who had written a blog about the history of CKLN, which I thought was very interesting. So I contacted her, and then we're going to have her on the show. And also, Robin Yetto, we're waiting on a segment from Robin Yetto, who's going to be sending in a segment, an actual interview that he's been conducting with the former CRTC Commissioner Martha Wilson. And she's going to be talking about the CRTC and comparing her experiences in 1998 to now, 2011. What is going on with the CRTC? And, all that and more. We've got information, we got news, we got some interviews, we got some music, all that coming up. Just going to play a quick something here, and then we'll be right back on Word of Mouth Wednesday. How about I just play a bit of some sounds of the protest in case you missed any of the Free Egypt protests. This is some sounds from the rally that took place. It was a rally in March that took place a couple weekends ago, so it wasn't last week and the weekend before that. And here, check it out.
It's important that Mubarak be overthrown. The question is what comes next. But we think the answer is not obviously the Egyptian army, not religious forces like the Muslim Brotherhood, not capitalist forces like El Baradei, but workers' revolution centered on the powerful Egyptian working class, and for that it needs a revolutionary leadership. And here in Canada, that also means opposing our own capitalist government, which has backed Mubarak for many, many years and struggling against the capitalist system at home.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. So that last voice you heard on that clip was the voice of John Masters, the Partisan Defense Committee, and he was out at the protest. He had some copies of the Workers' Vanguard newspaper he was trying to sell, and what he was talking about with the situation in Egypt, and then and the ideas of this revolution spreading around the world is an interesting one, because he's talking about what you'd need is the unity, but there's so much disunity involved with the protest movements, and that's one thing that's become apparent, and it's unfortunate because now is the time if there's major things going on, you'd hope that could bring people together, such as the crisis in Egypt, the people unite against their leader, known as a dictator, so there was the opportunity here in Toronto with the G20 because a lot of people were out protesting, and it didn't quite, it didn't quite unite. There's definitely divisions within the whole protest movement, and that's why the protests, weren't as successful in terms of protesting. And well, they're interesting crossover, and this is pretty much a headline making news. How, you know, where the crossover is between this Egypt protest and the G20 was that one of the videos that I made, actually not from the protest. So, you know, what's happened with Egypt? We can say that that the leader has stepped down, or at least stepped out of the leader's palace or whatever, and this man Mubarak. Now, what's happened though? So that, you know, that just took place last week. So that audio that you heard from the rally was from a march the week before that, the weekend before that, and so that, you know, was probably the first weekend of February. There was an action. It wasn't a march. It was just an action at the Young Dundas Square. And then what happened with that action was people were definitely out in the square, and then there was people across the street as well. And what I'm trying to get at here, though, the news-making event and the crossover event had to do with one of the police officers that was at the Egypt rally was actually a famous officer known throughout the G20 Toronto. And he is known as Officer Bubbles, and his real name is known as well because he was one of the officers that actually wore his badge and name tag during the G20 as Constable A. Josephs. So that's why we give him respect, because there was a lot of officers in the G20 that didn't even wear any name or name tag or badge number, definitely trying to bring in the New World Order with those kind of tactics, those anonymous style tactics. Now, what was interesting, though, was that he wasn't wearing the name and badge number, and we actually have that video. It's actually, the video's been posted on YouTube, and then they actually, the news-making part was that they actually used a picture from this. It was spotted at the Egypt rally. They used a picture 2 weeks ago in the Now magazine that made it. They printed it, and it was spotted. It had to get in. They got in with this issue about the badge numbers and stuff. That was basically the one crossover, and I just wanted to give a shout-out to Derek Sobral, again, who we've had on the show in the past, and who was also interviewed with me when we were on that RUTV, the Ryerson TV News. And that I mentioned it a bit at the end of the show last week. And last week we got a bit flustered at the end because we're trying to, you know, say our goodbyes, hoping that it wasn't the end of CKLN, and it wasn't. So that's, you know, that was a positive development. But the RUTV news clip, you can find it on YouTube if you search for RUTV News, and I think it's the week of February 7th. And I just want to give a shout out to Kaylee Ambrose, the journalist who covered the CKLN story. Now, that is some of the only video content of the CKLN story that's been out there, because the CKLN has been gotten into a few of the newspapers and a few of the online, you know, blogs and stuff are talking about it, but there hasn't been too much on television. I think CBC Radio did a piece on it, but What is a good headline was in today's copy of the Eye Opener, and the Eye Opener is the student paper here at CKLN. And hold on a second, we've just got a caller here, so I'm gonna try to put this one through, and we'll see if we've got a caller here. Hello, caller, you're on the air on Word of Mouth Wednesday.
Daniel, it's Rob.
Hey, Rob, how's it going?
Good, good. I wanted to let the listeners know that I was just talking to a former commissioner at the CRTC.
Awesome.
And you know, I'd like to pass through the interview to the station. Mm-hmm. I think it's very important for listeners to understand, and that the decision that was made and to revoke the license of CKLN is just one very controversial decision made of about three very controversial decisions made by the CRTC in the past few months. And there's been a huge upswell of protests against their decision, CRTC's decision, when it comes to usage-based internet billing. There's now a campaign run by avaz.org. I don't know if you've heard about that there, Libby.
Right, exactly. 48 hours to save Canadian media,
which is now probably less than 24 hours. This is about Fox News North, Sun TV. So Avaz you go to www.avaz.org, you'll find out more about what's happening with this issue of our about saving Canadian journalism. Essentially, there's going to be a CRTC rule change that will allow false news to be broadcast across Canada. And this is another decision that the CRTC is looking at. I think Avaz is looking for 50,000 to 60,000 signatures to send to the CRTC not to make this type of decision that will, again, infringe upon, you know, our democracy here in Canada and our journalism and our standards. You know, it is quite a popular internet-based petition. And, you know, if you're listening, I would go to www.avaz.org to find out more about what's going on with this yet another CRTC decision. So that's three, the internet usage-based internet billing, the revocation of the CKLN broadcasting license, plus the issue of Fox News North, Sun TV, changing the rules so that it gives license to anyone to spread false information so long as it doesn't endanger the lives of or health and safety of the public. I mean, these types of decisions are, you know, extremely controversial. So for folks who are listening to CKLN right now, it's not just the station that's being kind of falling to these types of decisions. And anyway, I'll bring it back to you. What do you have to say to that, Daniel?
Well, I was just wondering, though, Robin, because you mentioned that you had just spoken with a former CRTC commissioner. Did you get that recorded?
I did. Yes, I can send it in to you.
Yeah, if you could send it, yeah, then we'll play it.
So your listeners can hear a former CRTC commissioner talk about what the CRTC, her experience was back in 1998, and talk about the decisions that they were dealing with back then and how things have changed since then and today. So, you know, I could send that in and our listeners can decide for themselves what's going on because this is a lot bigger than just CKLN. I mean, this is a huge, obviously, this is, you know, for all of us who volunteer our time at CKLN, it's huge, but it's not just us. It is the public in general that is paying a price when it comes to you know, the internet, and when it comes to broadcasting. It is the public that's actually paying the price. It's not just us. But I'll send you that interview as soon as I can through the internet.
Okay, awesome. Thanks a lot, Robin.
All right, take care, Daniel.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
And that was Robin Nieto, the longtime co-host of the Word of Mouth Wednesday, and he's going to be sending in an interview. Hopefully we'll get to it in a few minutes. The former CRTC Commissioner Martha Wilson talking about the CRTC. Now, what Robin called in about, this 48 hours to save Canadian journalism, and this stuff started coming out yesterday or the day before, so pretty much the 48 hours, you know, I think maybe it's even tomorrow that they're going to be coming out with this ruling. Well, the CRTC, they're talking about a loophole, basically, or that's what the avaz.org is warning about, talking about a loophole to the fair and balanced rule that currently prevents media from outright lying to the public. So basically they're changing the onus of the investigation, and that is why we need to question this, because basically someone in the media could remain ignorant of, you know, looking up stuff and just say they never knew about this. You know, it's the same thing as, like, you know, say you didn't watch any of the G20 footage, you just saw a few things on the news about it, and you didn't actually watch any of the YouTube videos, you never saw G20 exposed, all that stuff, you might not think anything, you know, wrong happened at the G20, except for this, you know, rebellious protest group. Now, there was many, you know, there's many other things wrong with the G20, other than that, you know, so that's why and that's what I mean with this, you know, the ignorance. So just because I mentioned this G20 issue, and because there is an audio clip that I have here ready to go that I haven't played yet, but it is an important one because this actually reveals the incorrect stuff in the Ombudsman report, the Ontario Ombudsman of Ontario. So that's why this is an important clip to play. The Ombudsman report had errors. And this was revealed on the Real News. The Real News has been doing some great reporting on the G20, and that's why we've got to give some respect to the realnews.com, Paul Jay, and I think Tim Groves was even involved with doing some of the research on this, because this story is also posted on the Toronto Media Co-op, toronto.mediacoop.ca. And basically, what you're going to hear in this report is one of the major errors that the Ombudsman talks about, and it almost leads like a conspiracy theorist into thinking about, you know, that there was this secret group that organized this whole staged event of the G20. Now, what the Real News proves is that when the Ombudsman described it as a small cadre of security officials that were the only people that knew about the secret law or the 5-meter rule, it's not totally true, and they have some evidence that they got from Waterloo Police that shows that it was far more widespread. Now, let you hear this clip here. This is the Real News, and it's just a few minutes clip from a whole report. But this is the interesting part, because it's the errors in the Ombudsman report, and you know, the Caught in the Act report we've gotten a lot of respect to. So just wanted to try to, you know, fairly balance it out with revealing that it's not a perfect report. So this is that Real News report. Hold on here. Word of mouth Wednesday.
Not only was the public not informed of the passing of this act, that the RCMP, the OPP, and other police agencies involved in the G20 didn't know either until it was announced in the media.
Apart from a coterie of senior officials in government and the Toronto Police Service, no one else was aware of the existence of this regulation or the fact that they would trigger what amounted to martial law in downtown Toronto.
One has to believe that the Ombudsman was told this by the OPP and the RCMP, but it's a little difficult to believe. The Integrated Security Unit that the Toronto Police and the OPP and other agencies involved in policing the G20 were part of was headed by Alphonse McNeil, the chief superintendent of the RCMP, who answered to Ward Elcott of the Privy Council. Privy Council, of course, answers to the Prime Minister. It's very difficult to believe that Chief Blair on his own goes to the Premier of Ontario and asks for such a piece of legislation. But at any rate, this is what the various agencies said to him. And there's now direct evidence that other police agencies, in fact, were well aware of the Public Works Protection Act. A document obtained by the Real News shows that at least one other police force was well aware the act would be invoked. A series of slides accompanied by rough notes shows how officers of the Waterloo Police Force were trained for the G20 protests. Several pages are dedicated to the Public Works Protection Act, and a copy of the act was included for officers to read. One slide in particular reveals that police were given advance notice that a regulation would be passed under the act and that they were trained incorrectly on where their special powers applied. The slide lists a series of security zones, the controlled access zone, which applied to the convention center where world leaders were meeting, the restricted access zone, which included the hotels where world leaders would be staying, the interdiction zone, which applied to everywhere inside the fence, and another zone called the outer zone. However, it's unclear whether this referred to the traffic control zone or to all areas in Toronto that lay outside the fence. The slide says that the outer zone will be designated a public work. And while this informed Waterloo officers that public works designation would be used, it misinformed them on which areas would be designated under the Public Works Protection Act. The regulation didn't apply to anywhere outside the fence. It's very difficult to believe that the Waterloo Police Force is given a training document that clearly spells out the use of the Public Works Protection Act, and the RCMP, OPP, and the representative at the Privy Council are not aware of such a thing. Even though only two people were arrested directly under the Public Works Protection Act, the Ombudsman said clearly the importance of the act was that it created an environment, a culture, that police believed had extended their power well beyond the fences of the convention center.
Word. So that is, you know, you heard a bit there, you know, talking about extended beyond the convention center. Well, we're talking about the whole, you know, Toronto was, you know, the 5 meter rule was fraudulent because they were enforcing this everywhere. So the 5 meters was, you know, 5 meters from any public work or on any public work, or, you know, there's, we're spending a lot of time talking about that secret law, but what Paul Jay got into that in that clip on the Real News was some one thing that you heard in there that hadn't been mentioned, and that was the name of the head official, one of the head officials on the Privy Council. And the Privy Council is the Prime Minister of Canada's secret council. And he mentioned, I think it was Ward Elcock, who's actually one of the central planners behind the G20. And that is what we've been looking for. You know, who was calling the shots and who was designing this whole situation. And that is one of the leads, you know, lead of what's gone on here. And with this whole story here, where we're talking about the G20, where we're talking about this government, and we're talking about what's been going on here in Canada, I think it's important to remember that we are still here and you know, broadcasting on 88.1 FM. And in celebration of that fact, I'm going to play the music track We Are Still Here by Project for Peace. Shout out to tohokitote.ws. This is We Are Still Here.
Now, proud and brave, remembering the lessons my ancestors gave about acknowledgement and respect and the four races as they intersect. From the path behind us to the one that lies ahead, let us walk softly on a road we'll take. Move along, singing with one mind as we sing our song. We're glad to say, we say loud and clear, through all the sadness, we are still here. Socialize, minimize. soldier slave, assimilate, economize. Let's hold our head tight as we move along, singing with one mind as we sing our song. We're glad to say, and we say loud and clear, through all the sadness, we are still here.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We are still here. There is a track by Project for Peace, and it's a, you know, it's a quite fitting track, quite fitting headline, because we are still here. Last week we weren't sure, but this week we are, and it's February 16th, 2011, and we're actually going to be going into our next segment and talking a bit about the history of the station, because I noticed that there had been a blog posting on the internet online about the CRTC revoking C. Callan's license, and then the headline was, "Please help, please read help. My dad got the station's its license from the CRTC." And then I contacted the person who wrote it, and actually joining us on the phone is Leora Courtney Wolfman, who is a student out in Vancouver, BC. Leora, are you there on the line?
Hi, how's it going, Daniel?
Oh, hi. Thanks. Yeah, not bad. I'm glad that the station's still on. There is, you know, but I guess the fight's not over yet. So, what I wanted to bring up though is what your whole write-up is about, and you can actually read it on lcdubs.tumblr.com, and that's lcdubs.tumblr.com. Leora, what was your reaction when you saw this? And I guess, yeah, why when you saw the CRTC decision? And I guess, yeah, why was it important for you?
Well, little known fact about my dad is that he is one of the people who is responsible, or was responsible, for CKLN getting its license way back in the day. He was a radio and television arts student at Ryerson, and he was the station manager, and it was actually him and a couple of colleagues and students who were the reason why we're listening to CKLN, and even why it's called CKLN and not CKLT or something else. It's something that's quite close to home, because it's part of the family history.
Right. So what is it that you know about the history? Like how was your dad involved with the startup? Do you know anything about how it started?
Well, what I know is before it was CKLN, it was CJRT. So it wasn't officially licensed, to my knowledge. He was a student at Queen's University before, and he started volunteering at the radio station there and had a show and loved it so much that he decided to move back to Toronto and started working at CKLN and got some shows and became the station manager. And he wanted, you know, along with lots of other people involved in the station at the time, wanted it to be licensed so that it could sort of enjoy privileges that having a licensed radio station, you know, provides. So he met with the CRTC, and that is how they got the license. It took a lot of work. It's not as simple as just filling out a couple of forms. You really have to work and show that a radio station does have the right to have that license.
For sure. And your father, Martin Wolfman, who we were talking about, involved with the history of CKLN, was he like the station manager? Was he one of the first station managers?
He was the station manager at the time. So, I don't know. Whoa. How long there had been station managers before that, when it was CJRT, but he would have been the first station manager after it was be licensed, yes.
And so he was he ever a student at Ryerson, or was he just involved with the station? Or
Yeah, he got his Bachelor of Arts from Ryerson in, I think, in 1980. So, yeah, he was a student at the time, yeah.
Wow, yeah, that's something to note, because that is one of the criticisms with CKLN, or what they've brought up is the student involvement, and that is something to note then, that if it started by students.
Mm-hmm.
And was your dad involved with the radio business? Did that, you know, did CKLN, did he go on to be in radio, or?
He went on to do post audio, so he actually ended up running a recording studio mainly for post production. So he stayed in the business. He did a lot of work related to radio, and the people who he was working with at the time, one of them is now working for CBC Radio up in Nunavut, and another is works for, I believe, CBC or Standard Radio or something like that. So the other students who were involved, were Ryerson students at the time, they did go on to careers in radio. So it was, definitely a great place to learn skills and hone them and go on for professional activities.
Well, and the people that you mentioned, I'm not sure if you know any of their names or their contact, but if you did, I was just going to mention to send it to me, because we're you know, looking to get as much info as we can on CKLN, and you know, the history is important to remember at a time like this.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I can definitely do that.
Okay, great. Yeah, and the way that I found out about your story was because I was actually just searching online, searching for CKLN, and I came across your blog posting. And I was wondering, you know, how did you find out about this when this was announced that the CRTC was going to revoke the license of CKLN? How did you find out?
Being in Vancouver, where I don't have, you know, I'm not really involved in what's going on in Toronto, I saw it. One of my friends who's in a band in Toronto called Des Montier, and they get played on CKLN, and they've been interviewed and definitely had some opportunities and had musical exposure because of the station. He posted something online, and so that's where I saw it. And to find out what was going on. So,
Right, so the word is getting out online, and that is why that's an important thing with the way that you finish off. You tell a bit of the story about how your dad was involved in the late 70s, early 80s, setting up this, the whole station, and basically you mention how it literally hits close to home, this whole decision, and then you mention about that people can repost your blog. And that you're hoping that people will check out the CKLN site, because that has the links to the petition and stuff. I guess, yeah, like, how important do you think it is, to keep it up with the online, and I guess, are you still encouraging people?
Oh, yeah. It's something that's cool to talk to, just because it is, it's a cool personal story, and that makes, it makes it easier to get people who I know, at least personally, interested. And there's been a lot of people who have been spreading the news, even out here in Vancouver, so it's a news story I've been following for sure.
Right, yeah, right, and I'm glad you're able to get the story out, and, about this history and how it started, and I guess with how you know about it, did your father talk about much about CKLN? Do you ever remember him talking about it?
Yeah, he talked about it quite a bit. It was something that he was pretty proud of, and he at his recording studio that he ran, he took co-op students in, so he had several radio and television arts students. He had high school students when he ended up going on to go to Ryerson, take RTA there as well. So it was, it was a story that he, made sure to share with people pretty often, just to say, this is what you can do, and this is where you can come. And yeah, and he was pretty proud of it. It's pretty cool to say that when you're going to university, that you can start off just doing something for fun or as a hobby, and that can, that can turn into something as big as CKLN.
For real. Yeah, and that's why, we're hoping that we're not going to be shut down. We're hoping we're going to keep on being able to broadcast. And that is the shocking thing with this whole decision. So I guess you're not in agreement with the CRTC decision.
No, I'm not. I mean, I don't know how the station's managed. I don't work at the station, but I mean, if there's problems, those problems can be fixed. I saw a blog that somebody else had posted who raised a good point, which was if the same reasons that the CRTC is revoking CKLN's license or threatening to, if this was a station like a big chum station, for example, I think they would probably give the station a few more chances. And it's unlikely that they would even revoke a license for a station like that. Just it's kind of like picking on a smaller station when probably you find same sort of management problems anywhere else. Nowhere's run perfectly, and there's always an opportunity to improve on issues and take those take the issues that CKLN has pointed out and see what can be changed.
For real, yeah, and that's why we're hoping for a campus community radio being supported and being expanding all across Canada rather than shrinking or being shut down. With where you're at out west in Vancouver, and I know you're on Reading Week this week. Mm-hmm. In the university you're at, is there a station? And do you listen to any community radio out in Vancouver?
Yeah, UBC. We've got CITR. And I think it's got a lot more student involvement than CKLN does right now. I'd say most of the people who I've heard of who work there are actually students. And I mean, we pay a fee through our tuition that goes with our as part of our fees. The station seems to be pretty well funded. It's also the physical geography of UBC is that it's completely isolated from the rest of the city, so it's not like Ryerson, which is right downtown, which is pretty accessible to people, whether they're students or not. So I think that sort of helps make it a bit more of a very student-centered station.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's basically what we're hoping for here at CKLN, into the future, and hoping that people can learn from CKLN, in the way that the people that founded CKLN were able to, and moved on to, work in radio, and I just want to thank you, for talking about the history, and talking about the importance of CKLN, and your personal story, Leora Courtney Wolfman. Thanks a lot for joining us. So is there anything you wanted to add, or?
No, not really. I don't have anything to add really, except, people, if you want your radio station, if people really want to have CKLN and they want a radio station, I mean, student involvement is crucial. So get involved with your station, so all the students who are listening.
For real. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Courtney.
Cool. Thanks, Daniel.
All right. Peace. Word, and that was Courtney Wolfman. Courtney, or Leora Courtney Wolfman, who is a student out west, and she was talking a bit about her father, Martin Wolfman, who I guess was involved with writing the original application to get the CRTC license. And then the whole process was from the late 70s to the early 80s till when the license was got. This was actually one of the first community radio station licenses, or campus community radio station licenses, ever in Canada. And it was at Ryerson University, and Ryerson wasn't even a university then. It was Ryerson Polytechnic College. When I went to Ryerson University, it was a university. I've been volunteering here at CKLN. I was just working this out, the math out, I think as long as I went to Ryerson as a student. So basically, I've been a student at Ryerson University, and I've sort of been a student at CKLN, because after I finished Ryerson, I started volunteering here. It was actually a few months after, and I didn't know anything about radio, because I didn't go to school for radio. I went to school for film. I was an image arts film student. And when I started here at CKLN in 2007, it was It was in a student internship program, but it was actually an internship program because it wasn't all students. It was just people that were interested in learning about radio that didn't know about radio and wanted to get involved, you know, with community radio and CKLN. And so there were students, and then there was people that, you know, had been working, and there was, you know, and there was me who was, I was just out of school. And from that, I think I was one of the only people in the course that, like, you know, stayed around and kept on coming back here every week. And that's when I sort of got involved with this show, Word of Mouth Wednesday. And Robin Yetzo, who was the longtime co-host, and I was actually friends with Mika Anderson, who had been the co-host here before, and she actually sort of got me involved with the show. And she invited me to help out to play one of my clips that I had made for the news internship. And then I, you know, came down here a few weeks later and then interviewed Bob Lovelace. And then pretty much from the fall of 2007, I was pretty much started coming down every week. Now, what happened with the school, or what I was going to mention, was that Mika Anderson at the time was going to school for grad school here, and Robin Yetzo had also graduated. I think he graduated like the year before I started or something. So he was like basically, you know, the generation of you know, university people before me. And that is another involvement that we need to remember here, is that there's a lot of people that went to Ryerson that are now involved with the station, and the students are really busy, so they're not all going to have time to come down here every week. So that is something to keep in mind. What I was going to mention, though, just because it had been brought up, was what was printed in the Eye Opener today, because it is something that I didn't quite note. Well, I noted it here, talking about it's an actual quote from the Ryerson president, Sheldon Levy, said CKLN has nothing to do with the university. And then the quote is, I just separate the affairs of the university from the affairs of CKLN, he said. And that was Sheldon Levy, the Ryerson president. And that is not the kind of quote that, you know, we're hoping to hear, because we want to make the relationship between the university and CKLN stronger. That'd be the hope, I'd hope, for the future. And with that, I think we're going to want to hope that Sheldon Levy hasn't totally forgotten. When I interviewed Sheldon Levy, it was in September of 2008. So Sheldon Levy's been on the show, so he does know of CKLN, and he's heard of it. And I think I don't know if he remembers being on the show, but he was. And, you know, that was interesting. So maybe I'm going to try to see if he's interested in being back on the show. It'd be interesting if he is. Or, you know, if he isn't, I'd understand, because from that whole, you know, situation, well, there is some questions that we can be asking here. Now, what I have is a interview here that's sent in by Robin Yetzo that I'm going to try to see if I can access this on the computer. And this is going to be something, because it is a download. I'm gonna try to save it here, and this looks like it's going. So what we're gonna do here is play a quick track here, and we're gonna give a big shout out to Guru. This is Guru featuring Zion One. It's One for Your Mind, and we'll be right back. Word of Mouth Wednesday.
This ain't corny, so just turn on the news. The weather's getting stormy, much worse than the blues. There's death and destruction in large amounts, while others stack riches in large accounts. The majority of people are hungry or dying, and others who had hope have now given up trying. It's all been predicted and prophesied. Something's gotta change, yo, I got to try. Social budgets being cut, facilities being shut, prisons overcrowded, man, enough is enough. And how can you turn your back to the truth? There's no excuse, you can't say there's lack of proof. Disease is rampant and war is abundant. Politicians are just getting more redundant. If your awareness is keen and you got more than a clue, then these rhymes have meaning, surely for you. One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo. Back in the days on the boulevards, I'm chillin'. There used to be a crew, who knew they was villains. It was a Zion, the Babylon defeater. Yeah. Politicians lying high, gangsters for the heaters. Yeah, right. You remember that routine where they pimp you for the pleasure, getting more green? Uh-huh. You know the rhythm, feed your religion. And flood the street with crack, everything in hustle vision. On point, man, all the time, homes. You on point, man, all the time, homes. You got a home, man, no can't afford those. Well then, let me say amen, God protect you where you go. Here's a funky introduction, hope you understand that there's a feeling in the air, I hope you made a plan. I'm like the energizer, cause you see a rap along about the problems in the world, keep it black strong.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
One time, yo, it's divine, yo, for your mind, yo.
Check the vibe, yo.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We've got a file sent in here by Robin Nieto. It's the interview with Martha Wilson, a former CRTC commissioner, and we're going to play a bit of it here. Here, check this out.
Yeah, no worries. So, Martha, I think there's a lot that I'd like to talk to you about, but you were a former CRTC commissioner yourself. Can you tell us a little bit about your own experience at the CRTC?
Well, I was appointed in 1998 for a four-year term as the Ontario Regional Commissioner.
All right, word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We got some trouble here with the audio file. I think it is a mono file, so I think we might need to work on that and then try to play it next week. Hold on here. We just got a call here. Just going to see. Hello, CKLN. You're on the air. All right. I don't think we don't have a call, I guess. What I was going to mention, though, just in case Robin is out there listening, Robin, if you wanted to call in to talk about what happened in this interview, because I think it'd be better to play it next week once we can switch it into stereo. Let me just see.
Because the issues that you're dealing with are highly complex.
Yeah, it's a bit too low. Yeah, it's a bit too low. I think we're going to need to work on this a bit. What I could do, though, is play a bit of the interview that we didn't get to, that Robin Nieto had done on the shrinking Democratic space. And this was an interview that Robin did with Shane Moffitt. And this ties into all the stuff that's been going on. So we'll play a bit of that, and then we'll be right back here.
So given the CRTC's decision to revoke CKLN's license, I'm starting to interview different folks in different civic organizations here in Toronto to talk about what they're saying is a shrinking democratic space in Canada. To talk to me tonight about this is Shane Moffitt. He is the legal advisor at Greenpeace Canada, and he's been doing quite a bit of studies about the shrinking democratic space in Canada. So, Shane, tell me about this concept of a shrinking democratic space. Can you just, tell us briefly what this means to civic organizations and what you've been seeing happening as a member of Greenpeace?
Sure. Well, basically, civil or the democratic space refers to the civil space within which activists, community groups, campaigning organizations are able to freely express their views on matters of vital public interest. And it's become a major concern for Greenpeace as an organization that over the past couple of years throughout Canada there's been a shrinking in that free space within which we can discuss advocate and shine a light on matters of vital public interest.
So in the case of CKLN, for instance, we had the CRTC just revoke the license for the radio station. It's a community radio station.
Yeah.
And they used certain statutes within the law that seemed to be excessive to shut down CKLN. Is there anything in common with what happened to CKLN with what's happening to civic organizations in Canada?
Sure. Well, it's interesting you ask me that at the moment, Robin, because I'm just writing an article that speaks to that very issue. So, okay, two issues here. On the one hand, we're seeing a shrinking in the avenues by which individuals or groups can speak about matters of public interest, right? So basically, you know, it's becoming increasingly illegitimate to publicly protest, right? So that avenue by which to make your point is being shut down. And also when you see that if you challenge corporate interests, very often you're threatened with a lawsuit, right? So that ability to speak out in your community is being shut down. So I'd say that the threat to, the very unfortunate closure of the radio station is, as a community radio station, it's another example of an avenue by which people can make their opinions known being shut down. And if I could just jump in and really jump on the bandwagon of criticizing Canadian Radio, Television, Telecommunications Commission. At the moment, they're trying to broaden the prohibition on broadcasting false information to the extent that essentially it's going to be broadcasters are going to legally be able to broadcast false information, which is just an incredibly dangerous precedent. So, you know, CRTC, I don't know what they're playing at these days, but they're not doing much right.
So that was a bit of the interview there Robin Yetto had with Shane Moffat, who works for Greenpeace, the legal advisor for Greenpeace. And I think that's a good place to jump in, because we just got a phone call and a clarification from that interview with Leora Courtney Wolfman. What she was talking about with CKLN's history, and then she mentioned that it had originally been called CJRT, which the person that called in was mentioning was a bit false, because CJRT is apparently still on the air. That's Jazz FM. Now, what I found here, though, because I did some research on this, was the broadcasting-history.ca. It's actually a website, and it's a project that was actually started at Ryerson University, so I'm going to take another look at this. Now, what it has under the CKLN section, it actually has a whole map of Canada. You can find every radio station in Canada is represented on this site, the history of it, broadcast-history.ca, broadcasting-history.ca. And the first actual time category on the timeline for CKLN is 1971, and it says CKLN began as a closed-circuit station at Ryerson Polytechnic Institute, where CJRT-FM was located. So I guess in 71 or sometime around then, I assume that CJRT moved, and that CKLN, the original CKLN, which started as a closed-circuit station at Ryerson, so it wasn't even broadcast at that point, it was just on campus, I guess started in the same studio that CJRT was originally. And that's, I just assume that just from this one note here. I can't, you know, I don't even know the history. And I was born in 1983. And that is actually the same year that they say that CKLN went metro-wide on 88.1 FM at a power of 13 watts. So basically, if I was born in the same year that CKLN went metro-wide, I'm definitely not going to know as much about the history. But we are going to try to have some of the people, you know, the historical people, if we can try to get in contact with them, because it'll be interesting, you know, to talk about that. Another one, in between 71 and 83, there's only one note, and it says 1978, and that was CKLN service was expanded to downtown Toronto by cable. So I guess maybe it was even available on a cable. So those are some of the notes then. And to check that out, you can go to broadcasting-history.ca, broadcasting-history.ca. And just because we still got a few more minutes, maybe I'll just play a few more minutes of Robin's interview with Shane Moffat.
Like I said before, for as communities and smaller organizations, but even Greenpeace being a large organization, is still probably drained of a lot of its resources.
You know, I mean, even Greenpeace, you know, that a lot of people on the far right talk about Greenpeace being, you know, a multi-billion dollar corporation. Greenpeace is not a wealthy organization, but it's the opposite of a wealthy organization. But by comparison to some local community groups, we do have at least, you know, an emergency pool of funds by which to defend ourselves in a legal course, in a legal case. If you look at the legal system, is the point I'm trying to make, that it's inherently biased towards people who have the legal, i.e. financial resources, to defend themselves in court, to undertake private prosecutions in court. You know, I mean, I don't want to go too far down that path, but basically, you know, you start getting into the legal system, the dices are loaded, and they're not loaded in your favor, you know. I mean, probably a discussion for a separate day, but the criticisms of the legal system and its biases, particularly against marginalized and dissenting voices, are very well known and documented.
Okay, we were talking about the shrinking... something called the shrinking democratic space in Canada. Talking with Shane Moffat here at Greenpeace Canada, who is pretty knowledgeable about this stuff, being the legal advisor here at Greenpeace, and also he has been working with other organizations to address this problem of a shrinking democratic space in Canada. And just to end up this interview, Shane, now that you've been working with other organizations around this, do you see some kind of potential for growth in terms of getting together with other organizations in Toronto and across Canada to deal with this situation?
I mean, you know, group dissenting voices working together, it's certainly what you'd always aspire or hope to see, you know. Personally, I think that a year on from the G20 might be a good time to really manifest that kind of a solidarity within community campaigning and activist circles, to use that as a very broad tent, you know. I mean, there are a number of vital interests out there, trade unions, LGBTQ, disability, you name it. I mean, there's really broad swaths of the Canadian population there that have a vital interest in what's going on at the moment. And yeah, I would definitely like to see some sort of a collective response to what are our threatened democratic spaces.
Shane, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thanks, bud.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. So that was just a bit of Robin Nieto's interview there with Shane Moffat. And just trying to, still trying to figure out this history, because I just checked now on this broadcast-history.ca page, and now I've checked out the CJRT, and that's the Jazz FM currently, and they actually had a history with Ryerson Institute of Technology going back to 1949, according to this chart here. And then I guess there was a note around here in 1973, which is, I guess, the same time as around when the CKLN first started, and it notes that CJRT in 1973, due to financial restraints, Ryerson Polytechnic Institute announced its intention to surrender the broadcast license. And then in 73, in the same year, I guess, after a large public outcry, Premier William Davis announced to the Ontario legislature that the Ontario government would assist with the establishment of an independent corporation to operate CJRT. So I guess in 73 is when Ryerson and CJRT split ways, but I guess CJRT remained on the campus for many years, because it says here in 1975 that CJRT moved its antenna and transmitter to 50 Gould Street. Right now we're at 55 Gould Street. We're still on Ryerson University campus, and we're hoping that CKLN, you know, stays and remains as a strong and important you know, resource for Ryerson, as well as, you know, the rest of the downtown Toronto community. And to check out more on broadcast history, check out broadcasting-history.ca. And if you ever notice any, you know, misinformation or, you know, stuff that we're not saying right about the CKLN's past and stuff, then you can give us a call here online or on the air next time we're on Word of Mouth Wednesday. But that's just about it for us this week on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. My name's Daniel Libby, and I wanted to thank, again, Leora Courtney Wolfman, and I wanted to thank Robin Yetto, and I wanted to, thank all the listeners, everyone that help support CKLN, and you know, is gonna help us stay on air. You know, we still got the fight going on, so keep it up, and you know, stay peaceful. Word up. This is Daniel Libby, D Liberty. Word out. Peace.